Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the Haunted Collection with your host, writer, paranormal investigator, and haunted collector, Kevin Kane, here to bring you a few more of my favorite delightful horror stories, coming to you from Westover, Alabama, right here in the central part of Alabama. The home of my haunted collection, the actual collection of haunted dolls and items. I have over 200 haunted items in my collection now. I lost count at 200, and that was a couple of years ago. Who knows, I may have about 300 now. I really don't know. But I gotta tell you, there are a lot of spooky things that go on here. I'll tell you a little story toward the end of the show about a little spooky going on that happened here while I was gone to Savannah a couple of weeks ago when I brought to you a couple of stories live from Savannah. Actually, why save the best for last? Why not go ahead and just tell the best right now? While I was gone to Savannah, Georgia, my sister was coming to my house to check on my cat, Maddie, to make sure she had plenty of food and water and to clean out her litter box. Normally, when my sister comes in, Maddie will run to the front door to greet her. But on Wednesday, the evening before I was to return, my sister Tracy came in the door, and Maddie was nowhere to be seen. Tracy walked on through the house, calling out to Maddie, but Maddie still was nowhere to be seen. Tracy cleaned out the litter box. She walked through the kitchen to check on the food and the water dispenser. Everything looked fine. Past the kitchen is the master bedroom where a lot of my dolls are on display, the haunted dolls. Well, Tracy was concerned because she couldn't find Maddie anywhere and she wanted to make sure Maddie was okay. Tracy reached her hand into the bedroom door there, and it was pitch black now because it was late in the evening, past 8 o'clock when she came by. It was dark outside and quiet. So Tracy reached her hand into the bedroom, into the darkness, to flip on the light switch when suddenly a tiny hand grabbed her. Shocked and afraid, she pulled her hand back out. She peered in the darkness but didn't see anyone there. Gathering her boldness, she reached back in real quick and flipped the light on. No one was in the room except the dolls, sitting around smiling and staring. She looked at the bed and noticed it was very rumpled, quite rumpled, like some children had been jumping up and down on the bed, rustling up the sheets and the comforter. Later on, she asked me if I made my bed before I left for Savannah, and of course I told her yes, I did make it. Covers were pulled up, comforter in place, pillows positioned properly. But when she turned that light on, that room, that bed looked just like children had been jumping up and down on it. Deciding to leave it alone, she flipped the light back out, and she walked back through the house. When she reached the hallway leading to the front door, little Maddie came creeping out from behind the sofa and mewed at her. She said Maddie looked very afraid and she kept looking toward the kitchen, toward where the bedroom was. Tracy patted Maddie on the head and assured her that I would be back the next day. But Maddie still mewed in fear and stared toward that kitchen, not wanting to come out from behind the sofa where she had been hiding. Tracy said something in there had scared her. Here's the clincher. When I came home, of course, Maddie was very happy to see me, but when I went in the bedroom, my bed was exactly the way I'd left it. The covers were pulled up and straight. The pillows where they were, properly positioned at the head of the bed, like nothing had ever happened. So go with that. With what you will, I believe the children were playing, and maybe when they heard Tracy coming, they decided to scare her by grabbing her hand, but When Tracy refused to leave and turned the light on and saw the mess, I guess the children decided, oh boy, we better fix the covers back the way they were. And they did. And I greatly appreciate that. Wow, the things that must go on when I'm away from home makes me wonder. I think I'll get myself a nanny cam and set it up to see what I capture. Alright, so that was a little appetizer for you. I hope that got you in a spooky mood, because I'm going to go ahead with the first story for this show this evening. This one is called The Mummy's Ghost. There have been many, many terrifying tales inspired by the mummies of Egypt, but this one is unusual. It is set in the German city of Dresden in 1894. Herr Friedrich Weiser was the director of the Egyptian department at the Dresden Museum. One day he received a strange letter. It came from a man named Schultz. Herr Schultz was offering to sell the museum the mummy of an ancient Egyptian princess. The name of the princess was Nitocris. She was well known to history, but her mummy had never been found. Now, Schultz said he had the mummy in his house in Dresden. He invited the director to come over and examine the mummy anytime he wished. Normally, Weiser would have thrown such a letter in the wastebasket. After all, museums receive a lot of crank mail. But as it happened, he knew Herr Schultz. Schultz was a small-time dealer in antiquities. The museum had bought some items from him in the past. In his dealings with Schultz, the director had always found him most satisfactory. Weiser passed the letter on to his assistant, Karl Brutsch. What do you think of this? Brutsch read the letter and said, the man must be mad. How could he get such a valuable and famous mummy without the whole world knowing about it? Oh, I'm sure you are right, answered the director. Yet, we have had some good things from this man. And sometimes very valuable and unusual items do turn up in the oddest places. You know, there is a huge trade in illegal Egyptian items. We will have to be very careful. But it is worth a look. Schultz does not live very far from here. Brutsch was doubtful, but he agreed to go with the director to Schultz's house, where the mummy was supposed to be kept. The house was in a run-down section of Dresden. The prospect of finding something of value in such a place did not seem very promising. The director knocked at the door several times. There was no answer. Just as the director and his assistant were about to leave, the door opened. An old man, tall, stooping, and shabbily dressed, came to greet them. It was Herr Schultz. "Please come in, gentlemen," he said. He led them up a flight of stairs to the parlor. The furniture was old and worn. There was nothing to suggest that this was the home of a man who possessed a priceless mummy. The director felt very uncomfortable. I received your letter this morning, Herr Schultz, he said.
My letter, yes. You are interested in the Princess Nitocris.
Frankly, we find it hard to believe that so valuable a mummy could exist without the knowledge of museum authorities.
It is strange, I agree, said Schultz, but there are many strange things in the world.
The director was annoyed by Schultz's vagueness. Our time is limited, Herr Schultz. Perhaps we could see the mummy.
Of course, I would be happy to show her to you.
Schultz led the director and his assistant to a small, locked storeroom in the center of the room, where they found an Egyptian coffin. It seemed to be a coffin of late Egyptian times, the time of Princess Nitocris. The director examined the coffin in the dim light.
It seemed real enough. "May we see the mummy?" he asked.
"Certainly," said Schultz.
He lifted the coffin lid. Inside lay a small figure tightly wrapped in linen. The linen had become brown with age. Carefully, the director examined the markings on the wrappings. They bore the name of Princess Nitocris.
"Beautiful, isn't she?" said Schultz.
"You have nothing like her in your collection at the museum." The director tried not to show his own eagerness. Such a find would be a feather in the cap of the Dresden Museum. It would make him the envy of museum directors all over the world. "We will have to examine this more closely at the museum," he said.
Of course," said Schultz. "You will find her perfect."
"And naturally, we will have to know more about this mummy and how it came into your possession." Schultz's voice became hard.
"I can tell you nothing of where she came from. I have sworn to that. I can only tell you that the mummy is mine to dispose of as I wish."
"You have no objection if we check with the police?"
"Do what you like," said Schultz.
The following day, the mummy was taken to the museum. As far as anyone could tell, the coffin was genuine. The police could find no record of the theft of a mummy. But there were still many, many unanswered questions. However, the director wanted this exhibit for his museum at all costs. So he brushed aside any questions, and he paid Schultz the large sum of money he had asked for. The mummy was put on display immediately. It proved to be the popular attraction that the director had hoped it would be. About a week after the mummy was put on display, Director Weiser was working late in his office. As he started to leave, he was stopped by one of the women who cleaned up in the museum at night.
"Oh, sir," she said, "there is a young woman in the Egyptian gallery."
"Nonsense," said the director. "All the visitors have gone home hours ago. Are you sure you didn't see one of the other cleaning women?"
"No, sir. This was a very young woman. She was wrapped in a cloak and had a scarf around her head. There was something very strange about the way she moved. Her feet didn't seem to touch the ground. She didn't make any sound."
"My employees are seeing ghosts in the Egyptian gallery," thought the director. "I'd better do something before the rumor spreads." Weiser and the cleaning woman searched the gallery. They talked to other cleaning people and to the night watchman. No one had seen anything. Weiser then told the cleaning woman that she had been the victim of some sort of an illusion. Museums at night were spooky places, after all. Sometimes workers saw things. Why, he sometimes saw things himself. Well, actually he didn't, but he wanted to reassure the woman. So the cleaning lady left, a bit ashamed of herself. 2 days later, the night watchman reported seeing a similar figure. The director talked the matter over with his assistant, Brutsch. The night watchman had worked in the museum for many years. He was an old soldier and was not the sort to be seeing things. They decided that he must have been talking to the cleaning woman and believed her story. The director and his assistant agreed that it would be best to ignore the whole thing. So that's what they did. And no strange sights were seen for a week. But then, the figure appeared again. This time, Brutsch himself saw it. He was sitting in his office when slowly he became aware of a presence. He was no longer alone. He looked up and saw the figure of a woman standing by the wall. She was standing in the shadows, and Brutsch could see a little of her, but not very clearly.
He had the impression of a young woman wearing a long cloak with a scarf over her head.
Who are you? He cried. What do you want?
Instantly, the figure vanished. The museum director was beginning to believe that his whole staff had gone crazy. But there was more to come. Visitors to the museum began seeing the ghostly figure in the Egyptian gallery near the mummy of Nitocris. The director seriously began to wonder if the museum was being haunted by the ghost of the long-dead princess of Egypt. If so, it was a very odd haunting. The figure that people saw was not a mummy. It was not wrapped in linen bandages. The figure wore a modern cloak and had a modern scarf covering her head. Still, the director could not bring himself to believe that anything out of the ordinary was happening. People will soon get tired of this and our ghost will disappear forever, he told himself. And sure enough, for a while, the figure seemed to disappear. A whole week went by, and no one reported seeing it. Then, as he often did, the director was working late in his office, when suddenly he knew that he was no longer alone. The figure of a young woman in a long cloak with a scarf covering her hair was sitting across from him. She looked as pale as death. Indeed, her form seemed to be almost transparent. "What do you want?" he said to her. The figure stood up. There was a ghostly smile on her face. She let the cloak fall from her shoulders. The body under the cloak was that of a corpse. It was half rotted. But that was not the worst. Over the heart, there was a huge gaping wound. The figure removed the scarf around her head, which revealed another deep wound. The director was so horrified he was unable to move. Slowly, the figure faded away. Only after it disappeared entirely was he able to move again. What he had seen was not the phantom of some long-dead Egyptian princess. No, this was the ghostly corpse of a recently murdered young woman. The next morning, the wrappings were removed from the mummy. They covered the corpse that the director had seen. The corpse had been partly embalmed and then wrapped to look like a mummy. When the police visited Schultz's house, they found that he had already left. It seems that he too had seen the figure in the Egyptian gallery and knew what it meant. In his house, they found all the tools of the forger. Schultz was very good at his dishonest craft. He had started by selling small fakes. Then he decided to sell something really important, like a royal mummy. Several months later, the forger was picked up in Prague. He was still trying to sell forged ancient items. He quickly admitted the murder of the young woman, but would give no details. "She was nothing," he said. "I made a royal princess of Egypt out of nothing. I could have made kings and emperors." Schultz had gone completely mad. It made no difference. They hanged him for murder anyway. And that is the end of our story, The Mummy's Ghost. Very creepy, huh? How that turned out not to be a mummy after all, but a murdered victim that Schultz had wrapped up to make it look like a mummy, just to make a little bit of money off of this poor museum director.
what lengths people will go for money and wealth and fortune. It's a scary world out there. Well, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, for our second and last story tonight, I thought I would share another story. You know, at the beginning of this series, I told a story about the very first haunted doll I ever brought home. Her name was Patty. My first haunted item in my collection. Well, tonight I thought I would share the story of one of the other dolls in my collection, an early entry in my collection from way back in 2014. This is the story of my haunted doll, Tammy. In life, Tammy lived alone with her mother in St. Louis, sometime back during the 70s. Her father left them when Tammy was at a very early age, so she had no memory of him. However, Tammy lived a life of complete bliss with her mother. When Tammy was six, her mother remarried a man who loved Tammy and accepted her as his own daughter. Tammy's new stepfather also had two teenage daughters from a prior marriage. These girls were none too happy about a new little sister coming into their home. But still, their father doted over Tammy. He even bought Tammy a beautiful doll with pigtail, little braided pigtails and bright blue eyes just like Tammy's. He gave Tammy the doll and she treasured it. The teenage daughters became quite jealous of her. Long after the marriage, of course, in their home in St. Louis, one evening Tammy's stepfather decided to take her mother out on a date. Tammy's stepsisters were left in charge of babysitting her. Of course, the sisters held no excitement for this chore. Their jealousy at a boiling point by now, they plotted a nasty joke against her. They drew a tub of water. Calling to Tammy that it was time for her bath, they lured her into the bathroom, grabbing her. They plunged her into the tub without waiting for her to even remove her clothes. Tammy struggled against them, but her six-year-old petite little body proved to be no match to the two teenage girls. The girls took turns holding Tammy under the water, dunking her over and over into that tub. After a few minutes, Tammy struggled less and less against them. At one point, the oldest stepsister continued holding Tammy under the water for a long time in order to really scare her. They really wanted Tammy to know who ruled the house. Eventually, Tammy stopped moving completely. The stepsisters let go of her and stepped back. Tammy made no motion to sit up out of the water. Their jealous rage now turning to terror, the girls dragged Tammy from the tub. One of them felt for a pulse but could find none. Neither girl knew how to perform CPR. They certainly did not want to call for help as they feared getting in trouble and even getting arrested for their fatal prank. Instead, they cooked up another plan. Taking off Tammy's wet clothes, they dried her off and placed her pajamas on her. Carrying her to the bedroom, they tucked her into bed, closed her eyes for her, and left her there to appear like she was only asleep. When the parents returned home, Tammy's mother peered into the bedroom door at the girl, but, assuming she was asleep, left her alone. It wasn't until the next morning, when she tried to awaken Tammy, that she realized the horrible truth. Tammy was dead. Not long after that, Tammy's family reported strange goings-on around that doll that Tammy's stepfather had given her, the doll she so cherished in life. They could hear Tammy's voice speaking
a disembodied voice around that doll, and little footsteps in her bedroom. Whenever the doll was moved to a different room, the footsteps and the voice would follow. Also, surprisingly enough, came a lot of activity from the bathroom, like things getting moved around and noises, like cabinet doors banging open. Sometimes the sound of running water echoed from the bathroom. The situation became too intense for the family, so they finally gave up the doll to a paranormal investigator who came out to help them. So bitterly, they had to say goodbye to Tammy's doll, and the paranormal investigator, who is my friend AJ, took it and kept it for a while. In 2014, she offered to let me adopt Tammy, so I decided to add Tammy to my collection. Her story was quite tragic, and I really felt for that little spirit. Not long after Tammy came into my home, I began hearing strange noises at night coming from my master bathroom, near my bedroom, and close to where I kept her doll. It sounded like the cabinet doors banging open and shut, as if someone were looking through them in search of something, or just simply at play. One late night, I was awakened by the sound of the faucet of the bathroom sink turning on. The sound of the running water roused me up from my bed. At first, I thought perhaps my cat Maddie was messing around in there, and perhaps using her paw had batted the faucet knob around, causing the water to turn around or turn on. However, as I sat up in bed, my hand came to rest on her fur as she lay there right next to me on the bed. She too was just waking up from her own slumber. Before I could enter the bathroom door, the faucet shut off. I turned on the lights but saw nothing out of place. For a few seconds, I stood there looking around, waiting to see what might happen next. When nothing happened, I turned the light off. Heading back to my bed, I heard the faucet switch go on and off really quick behind me. I laughed as I realized that this had to be one of my little spirit daughters playing around. And then it dawned on me. I bet this little spirit is Tammy, letting me know she's there. A few weeks later, I was heading to bed, and I said goodnight to the little spirits as I normally do. In my mind, I was thinking about Tammy in that bathroom, and I decided to try capturing an EVP. So I placed my digital recorder next to Tammy's doll. Now, an EVP is the abbreviation for electronic voice phenomenon. People believe you can catch a spirit's voice with digital recordings, voices that the naked ear cannot hear. I said goodnight to Tammy and left the recorder running for several minutes. Eager to hear what I might have captured, I just couldn't wait. I shut off the recorder and took it into the kitchen where I plugged in my earbuds and listened to what I'd just recorded. On the recording, right after I say goodnight to Tammy and tell her I love her, a small child's voice could be heard as if coming right behind me. The voice on the recording said, "Daddy," as if calling out to me, and it had the sweetest tone to it. What is even more amazing is the fact that when I was standing there next to Tammy's doll and saying goodnight to her, the door to the master bathroom was right behind me. Judging by the acoustics of the voice on the recording, it sounded as if she was standing in the bathroom right behind me, calling out to me. This recording definitely excited me, and I played it back several times to listen before I finally managed to get to bed. The fact that she had called me Daddy was just so precious. It just really captured my heart. Yes, this is a true story, and if you'd like to hear that actual recording of Tammy calling out, "Daddy," just go to my website,
writerkevincain.com. Kane is spelled C-A-I-N. So go to writerkevincain.com and go to the links section, and you'll see a link to my YouTube page, My Haunted Dolls. There are many recordings of voices and evidence that I have out there and stories behind some of the dolls, but you'll find the EVP of Tammy, and you'll probably agree it's just as precious as can be, and I'm so happy I captured it. I will definitely share more stories about some of my haunted items in my collection in the future. There's many, many stories and items, so I shouldn't run out too soon. But until then, I'm going to go ahead and bid you adieu, and I thank you so much for tuning in and for your support. And until the next time we meet on The Haunted Collection, this is Kevin Kane, writer, paranormal investigator, and haunted collector, saying good night, pleasant dreams, and happy hauntings!